Tony and Jenny Brewski here from Real Ghost Stories Online. There has never been a better time than now to be an EPP, extra podcast person, to Real Ghost Stories Online.
There's more exclusive content than ever before.
Plus, our new EPP website is up and running where you can access all of our exclusive content anywhere you want on any device. Exclusive video, all of the archived episodes, it's all there when you sign up to be an EPP at realghoststoriesonline.com.
It's only $5 a month.
And that goes to keeping our show on the air and alive. Sign up now, become an EPP, and enjoy all of the bonus episodes for yourself when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com. Just click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your Real Ghost Story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And greetings from the wonderful world of Real Ghost Stories Online, where our studios are physically in the state of Kansas. I don't know if you guys have heard about this this little phenomenon that happens here, but they tend to have really shitty weather. It just kind of is an ongoing thing. I don't know. It kind of makes you look back and go, why did anyone ever decide, hey, let's just set up camp here? And it seems lovely. There's little vegetation that grows naturally. Waterways that tend to dry up, but hey, let's stay here for generations. But that's where we are. It's not all that bad, but we have tornadoes in this area, as you know. And normally, tornado season is kind of done by about now, but they really can happen pretty much any time of the year. So last night, it's just me and our little one this week, because like I said, Jenny on the show yesterday, Jenny is visiting some relatives in Texas for the week, and me and our littlest were playing around, having some fun, and also I look up and like, what is going on here? As we're driving back from a movie, and it's looking a little bit stormy. And I'm thinking, you know, worst case, we were going to get a thunderstorm. No big deal. It was really hot, like 105 yesterday with the heat index, okay? And normally when it gets that hot, you don't usually get tornadoes. So I get home, look on the weather. Oh, hey, look at that. There's a tornado warning in the county right next to us. So we go downstairs and we're just kind of, you know, and it looks like the storm is slowly moving this direction. And it luckily never gets here. It actually starts turning the opposite way, as only storms can do in Kansas. Suddenly, you have like a storm that's very much on an easterly path, and all of a sudden, I think we're going to start cycling the other way. And it goes backwards. But with that storm just north of us in the Hutchinson, Kansas area, is where there was a large tornado that was produced out of it. But good time. So when you see things like that, it's a little bit spooky, it's a little bit scary, but you also learn to unplug things around your home and any structure that you care about when a thunderstorm comes in because of the lightning and that sort of stuff. And that's something I've done since I was a kid. But seeing this thing look like it was on a path for this direction, I went in here to the studio, which is it's part of our home, but it's you have to actually enter it through our garage, and that's how you get into this this office and studio. And what I do is I unplugged things. I unplugged the computers. I unplugged, you know, the equipment and things that if we were to get struck by lightning would likely have to be replaced because they would get fried, as we've had happen here before. And I also unplugged the air conditioning unit. We have like a little one in the office here because there's the air in the house doesn't reach this far very well. It doesn't reach very far in the house itself, but it certainly doesn't reach it here. So I have a little unit outside of the wall here. It's kind of like a hotel type unit, if you will. And I thought, hey, you know, if we get struck, I'd rather not have to replace that too. So I unplugged it. And thinking, I'll plug it back in the morning when I come back in the office. Oh, wait. It's not a normal work day because I'm working from within the house during the day because Jen's gone. So I didn't get out here till right now, and it's mid-afternoon the following day. And it was about 102 again today. And there's been no air circulating in this office at all. So it's a little bit toasty. I'm doing the show without pants today, kids. No pants, just ghost stories. I'm kidding. I am wearing pants, but it is a little bit toasty in here. I normally have a cup of coffee when I do the show. Today, that's not going to be the case, but we have plenty of good real ghost stories for you and your calls. Of course, our phone number 855-853-4802. And if you like the show and you want to keep us on the air, as I always say, please consider becoming an EPP, extra podcast person. Sign up on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. That's what keeps our show a-going. We will kick off the show today with a letter. And this letter comes into us from Faith. It says, hi, Tony. I want to say that I am new to your show and hooked from the first episode I listened to. I have subscribed and hope that the experiences I've had will be of interest to you. I've had many paranormal experiences and would like to send the rest of them to you if you're interested in sharing them. In 2001, my family was living in Bellevue, Washington. My grandmother was living with us at the time and had been there for about 2 years. On July 4th of that year, both of my parents were at work. I was 11 and home alone with my grandmother. I was in the living room, and her bedroom was at the end of the hall on the other side of the house. At one point in the late morning, after around 11 a.m., her television was turned up so loud that I could hear it from the living room, even through her bedroom door. Knowing that she was losing her hearing, I chose not to disturb her and waited for about an hour to knock on her door asking for lunch. I was the first person to find her body. She'd been sitting on the bed in her pink nightgown, but at some point, she turned to the left, coughed very hard, causing an aneurysm in her brain to rupture. At that point, she died instantly and fell face down into a box of tissue. It was a traumatizing sight, one I will never forget. Hours later, the coroners came by and her body was taken away. We had a wake for her instead of a funeral, and her body was cremated. Just a few days after the wake, I was home alone again. My parents were at work, and my sister, who was supposed to be babysitting me, had snuck out and gone to a friend's house. I was sitting in my favorite leather chair in our family room. The chair faced the TV, which was right next to the hallway that led to our bedrooms. My grandmother's bedroom was at the end of the hall and was still unoccupied, as my father didn't want to clean her room out yet. As I was sitting in the chair, I saw something move from the corner of my eye. I turned away from the TV, and walking down the hall was my grandmother, who looked as if she had just styled her hair. She always wore her gray hair in curls stacked on her head. She was wearing a red sweater, skinny blue jeans, and socks, but no shoes. I watched her come down the hallway. She reached the doorway that connected the hallway to our living room, and she said nothing and made no noise as she came towards me. I was frozen with shock. The living room had hardwood floors that she had always complained about, and as I watched this entity, she stopped at the edge of the carpet, looked down at the hardwood floor, and vanished. That's the only time I have ever seen or felt her since her passing. Very creepy story. In my mind, I was almost envisioning the ghostly librarian from Ghostbusters. Who else had that going on in their mind? Anyone? Although she wasn't wearing jeans, but you envision a grandmotherly type character. Luckily, she didn't fly up and do the thing to you, but I don't really have a whole lot to comment on there. Obviously sounds like it was your grandmother that was, or at least the energy of her may have been more of a residual thing, just because it didn't seem to interact or see you or have any, you know, energy towards you. May have just been a common path that she took. You know, I wonder if we're ever able to figure out residual energies and their paths and where they go. You know, you can look at carpet in a home that's, you know, 5 years, 10 years, certainly 20, 30 years if it's the same carpet, and you can tell where people walk. You can see their path. You can see where the carpet is worn. There's certain paths that we take on a normal and a daily basis. People that have residual energies and residual hauntings in their homes, I wonder how often it is that they're seeing those residual hauntings still taking that path. That would be what would make sense to me if it's a residual haunting. It would still be on that same path that it always took, the worn path on the carpet. I think the sign that there may be something not so residual about it is if it's doing what it seems like it always had done, but it's not on the right path. It's not where the worn carpet is or the worn floor is. Right, just a thought. 855-853-4802 is our number. Velvet writes in, we were a weird bunch of kids band together by an inability to fit in. Total neo-maxi-zoom dweebs. And we were comfortable with who we were. I'll not use real names for the sake of my friends who may even listen to the show. There were four of us that constantly hung out and three who were floaters. Trina, who was not very bright, was very cheerful, loved to flip her hair and sing badly. Anna, one closest to my personality, had a devil-may-care attitude and was always willing to do a dare on a whim. For example, the time we walked across the frozen lagoon at the Lincoln Park Zoo one winter. And me, Elizabeth, lover of ballet, pink overalls, unicorns, and anything paranormal. The frequent floaters were Leo and Benny. Since the story involves all of us, it was pertinent to the story to introduce the cast of characters. It was 1983. The hot, humid summer was almost over and fall was... If you're not familiar, Chicago summers are hot, sticky, miserable, and long, and they seem to go on well into October. I live near Oak Street Beach, and even though we spent many days there, lying on the oven-like cement, the sand had unmentionable things in it, so we sunned on the hard, hot slab, attempting to get tans and lighten our hair with sun in. If the weather became too unbearable, we would amuse ourselves by spending time in Watertown Place, riding the escalator and enjoying the free cool air conditioning. Another way to stay cool would be the house hop, depending which parent was gone for the day, or depending on whose house we'd hang out at. Raiding the foodstuffs, watching TV, and occasionally dropping weird shit on unsuspecting people from the high-rise windows. It was in one of these high-rises in the middle of Rush Street where Anna lived. I not only visited daily, but slept a good portion of my teenage years on her 22nd floor apartment. Trina, previously mentioned, was unofficially adopted by Anna's dad, also lived with Anna and her dad. Trina's family was messed up, and she was homeless before Anna. Dad, as we called him, let the bunch of us stay at their place, so we would be safe since most of our homes were not. Dad worked nights and slept days, so our motley group had a lot of time on our hands to be free. It was during one of our free times that I remembered my long-lost friend, my dad's old carved Ouija board. You may remember the board previously provided me with friends when I was a toddler. Anna, Trina, and I already maxed out the lights as the feather stiff, as the board game having succeeded with levitating each other. Passé were the mind games, where we would guess each other what each other was thinking, sending pictures to one another mentally. We needed something more challenging, and I remember my father's Ouija board packed away somewhere at my grandmother's house on the south side of Chicago. I quickly decided to take a trip to the L to pick up the board. An hour or so later, we arrived at my nana's house and were relieved to find my father home alone and engrossed at fixing his car. He paid no mind to our babble, grumbled hello, and pointed to his room when I inquired about the whereabouts of the Ouija board. I went into my dad's room and found it deep in the box in the closet within minutes. I bounced out of the room, exclaiming, "I got it!" Anna went to grab the board, and I quickly held it out of her reach. "No, I need to tell you a story first before we use this. It's kind of dangerous." I went to the back room, and I commenced to tell them the story I wrote in a few weeks ago. It's on Dead Girl EPP 38. Once the story was out, rather than rethink our strategy, we became even more incensed to use the damn thing. We sat in a circle and placed only the tips on the planchette, giggling and squirming over who was moving it and asking stupid questions about boys we barely noticed as we slowly became more focused and less playful. The room became darker, more solemn somehow, and he came into our lives. There's a certain feeling you get when using the planchette when there really is a spirit in control. At least for us, our hands and arms felt light. We tingled and felt circled. by the energy, nervous energy. In my mind, it reminded me of the color of blackish green. The first thing he said was, "Hello, will you be my friends?" We said, "Sure, who are you?" He said, "I know who you are." I snorted, "Right, what's my name?" And he said, "Elizabeth." "Good guess," I smugly said. "Everyone here knows that." Planchette moving swiftly, the words quickly formed, and my heart fluttered. "Your mother calls you lady." It still makes me sick to think about that moment. See, this is, if Jenny was here, where I would break into Lionel Richie or Kenny Rogers singing Lady. Well, she's not here, so heck, I can do it and no one's going to stop me. I'm gonna do the entire song. Can we get a piano? Lady. I'm kidding. No one knew this. I hated when she called me that, so I certainly never told anyone. The girls looked at me for affirmation, and I nodded. He who became RIT, R-I-T for reasons I will never know, invaded our group and became a daily participant in our lives. At first he was nice, saying he was in a dark place and wanted to be free, acting like a small child, afraid of something chasing him as the devil, he would say, or a demon. We were stupid enough to take the board back with us to Annie's house and set it up in the closet. We invited Leo and Betty over to join us, secretly thinking more strength in numbers. The day after we placed the board in the closet, we woke up and went about cleaning the house. After about a half hour, we hear a loud crash and ran to the closet to find that the light had exploded. We cleaned it up and replaced the bulb. When we went back into the bedroom, all of the speakers, radio, chairs, and stuffed animals were turned towards the closet. We'd all been together cleaning the glass. We did not do this. We went to the board and placed our fingers on the triangle. It moved before we asked a question, telling us why we had not come to say hello. He was lonely and wanted to play. Trina, afraid, squeaked out, "We're sorry." I thought to myself, "No, I'm not," and immediately received a nasty retort from him. "Be careful what you think. I can hear you." Bile rose in my throat. This was not cool. What had we done? We asked Rit to let us finish our chores and promised to play when we finished. We scurried around terrified of what might happen if we took too long. 20 minutes later, the doorbell buzzed and Anna opened the door for Leo and Betty. We all went back into the closet. As we sat down, we heard a loud click. Leo jumped up and tried the door to the closet, which thankfully opened. We all sighed and turned to the board where the planchette was pointed to no. Anna and I reached out and asked what happened. Then a loud click and another. It was the lock on the front door. We ran to the door and tried to turn the bolt. Leo tried. We all tried. It would not budge. Some of us screamed. We went back and Rit told us we were going to stay and playtime was over. I almost passed out again. Our fear, our curiosity, and our teenage angst had added fuel to something dark. We had invited openly something which now tried to force itself deeply into our lives. I do not remember much about that time spent in the closet. I know we were made to hurt each other, hitting and such. Nothing much, just enough to humiliate us. Sometime later, he began acting odd. The planchette moved more slowly. Something scared Rit, and he disappeared. His last words, "He's coming for me." We waited a half of a second before slamming out the door, getting stuck in the frame. In our rush to get the hell out, we ran to the garbage chute, a furnace for high-rises, and threw the damn thing into the pit, planchette and all. Our group lasted for the rest of the summer, but faded before winter. Anna and Trina moved out west. Leo and Betty never called again. I don't blame them. I learned my lesson. Ouija board bad. I still wonder what happened to him. I know now that burning this board can release the thing called forth. What does this mean? I'd hate to have him pop up on one today. Is it possible? Love you guys. Have more to come. Not all are this long. Hope you enjoyed my very true tale. I did enjoy your very true tale. That was very well told. Thank you for sharing that with us. Really do appreciate that. Well, I wonder if by throwing the thing into the garbage disposal, essentially, where it burns the board, if that released it essentially into the building. And is it still in the building doing this
with other people now? That would be my question and concern.
Because essentially they say when you destroy something like that, it just, you know, it's like letting something, a wild animal out of a cage, you know, or opening up the gates of the zoo. It can pretty much then go wherever it damn well pleases. And there's not a whole lot you're going to do to get it back into its cage. So I don't know. Be interesting if you were in contact with anyone still from that apartment building to see if anyone had anything strange occur to them, similar to what you guys had happen after you disposed of the board. Our phone number is 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost story with us. Next story comes to us from Morn. It says, hi, Tony and Jenny. So happy you used my story, Eyes in the Night, as a title of a episode. Just wanted to make one small correction. I'm not a her. Not sure how that got confused, but oh well, no offense taken. I'm so happy you two enjoyed my last story and wanted to hear some more. As requested, I'll tell you about the angelic and childlike entity whom my wife and I have jokingly named Khan. To properly explain what and why Khan is, I need to try to explain a few things I have learned from experience and conversations with other entities. Khan is mostly easily explained as a cherub. Yes, the little fat angels you see in old paintings. From what I understand, when a person is to be born and their body is in the first stages of pregnancy, a cherub is sent to be a champion for the incoming human soul. This cherub will normally arrive before the child is born in an attempt to affiliate itself with the family and surroundings. Once a child is born, the cherub stays with the person their entire life. The cherub becomes bound to the person and becomes that person's caretaker. I believe this might be why some people who have small children or are expecting will sometimes have encounters of childlike sounds or hear childlike sounds, even glimpses of children. Not saying this doesn't account for every encounter, but it could explain some ghostly experiences. With that out of the way, on with my story. My wife and I had a miscarriage very early, over 2 years ago. It's my understanding that Khan was sent to us before the baby was lost, but due to the foresight beyond my understanding, Khan knew my wife and I. By the time the story is played on your show, we will have publicly announced to our friends and family we will be having our first child. For these 2 years, Khan, who is currently watching me type, has made himself known to us in many ways, from whistles that my wife, myself, and our dog have heard, to the sounds of small feet running across floors, and if you're lucky, we'll get glimpses of a small, fat, bald head peering around the doorway of a sofa. Khan has never done anything harmful or scary, though I have seen startled many times, looking up, seeing a hand quickly withdrawn from behind a doorway or an eye watching you from around a chair, like he's doing right now because he knows I'm talking about him. What Khan really likes to do is move things, keys, remotes, DVDs, anything really that's light enough for him to move. Tony was asking a long time ago how entities move items. Khan claims that he likes to slide things around across the floor and countertops when no one is looking. Khan really loves to follow my wife to work, where she nannies for twins, 5-year-old girls. Khan just loves the idea of children, and once, when the twins were playing treasure hunt with their dominoes, Khan relocated a few of the girls' hidden treasures. The twins searched for 4 days with no luck of finding the missing 3 dominoes, became very upset. I asked Khan if he had moved the dominoes, which he confessed, and I told him to give them back. With a sigh and a roll of his eyes, he was gone. Later that day, when my wife came home from work, and she was thrilled to tell me that the twins had found their missing dominoes that randomly appeared underneath the front door welcome mat, where they had checked a few times before. Another thing that Khan loves to do is follow me whenever he knows I'll be going somewhere exciting for my work. From prisons to factories or even schools, if it's somewhere new or different, he loves to tag along. This is fine by me because Khan is apparently very good at sniffing out entities within the buildings and comes back to me with information on the things he finds. There are ghosts he can normally tell the name or gender, even how active or friendly they are. If it's a neutral entity, he can normally tell me something of their class or characteristic. Demons he is the best at sniffing out and will come rushing back to me at full speed, screaming bad, 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 and hides behind me until we leave. Sorry if this went a tad long, but there's just so much on Khan and the cherubs that I've barely scratched the surface of. I'll try and write again soon if you all are still interested after this long ramble today. Just want to say I love the show. Tony, I love your humor and how it keeps the show light. And Jenny, you do a great job of trying to comfort people who are encountering things beyond their understanding. Be well and keep safe. Mourn. Well, it's a very interesting story, Mourn. Thank you for writing in and sharing that with us. I'd be curious to understand more about how Khan interacts with you. Is it literally a conversation? Is it literally back and forth? He's telling you things like a child? Or is this more of a things being communicated, for lack of a better term, telepathically, or just through emotions? And are you the only one who sees Khan? Do others encounter Khan too? Or is this something that is just designed to be seen by you? Our phone number here is 855-853-4802. Of course, you can also write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. And as I said the other day, if you guys like the show, you want it to continue, please consider becoming an EPP, an extra podcast person. If you already are an EPP, thank you so much. If you can, you're looking for something to tweet or to post on Facebook, do me a huge favor. Do Jenny a huge favor. And let your friends know about our show. Say whatever you like. Point them in our direction. Let them know we exist. Let them know how to find our show. That would be greatly appreciated. That is word of mouth advertising, and that's the only advertising we got. And that's how we grow the show. And that's how we can ultimately create a better show for you. So please do tell a friend however you choose about us. Rue writes in, I love your show. It is actually my first podcast addiction. Both of you are fun to listen to while communicating or commuting to work and while cleaning animal cages. I work at a pet store. Keep it up. Story. A little background first. I'm a Navy brat and moved a lot as a kid. I had my share of experiences, as well as my older brother in naval housing, old bomb shelters in Mare Island, California, and in old and new houses. In other words, I have tons of stories. I'll start with the one that stuck with me the most. It happened in a new house in Sugar Land, Texas. I was in my mid-teens at the time. The house is a new two-story that we had built in a new subdivision. Not the opening to Poltergeist, I promise. At the time, I was home alone with my arthritic chow lab mix, Tilly. My father, being the overprotective type, installed heavy-duty locks on my bedroom door since he did not trust my brother's friends. I just finished my shower and was in the middle of my room when the door started jiggling, like someone was trying to open the door. I stood there and stared at the knob jiggling. My brother was staying the night and his friends. My mom was at work, so was my dad. This was before I needed a cell phone, so I couldn't call for help. I was frozen in fear and nothing but a towel, thinking it was an intruder. Eventually, I got enough courage to say hello. I was dry at this point and got nothing. Then I watched the knob jiggle quicker, like the person was frantic to get in. I was freaking out more, looking for something in my room I could grab as a weapon. Nothing but stuffed animals. Damn, more time has passed. Feels like forever. The knob stopped. I think it's a trap. I wait. Stared at the door, nothing. Listened for noises outside the door, and still nothing. I get enough courage to unlock the door and open it quickly. On the other side of the door, staring at me, is Tilly. My dog being there scared me more than the knob moving. Tilly doesn't go upstairs. Her arthritis is so bad, she couldn't have gone up without being carried. I had to carry her back downstairs later. I stayed downstairs until someone came home. I'm 30 now, and each time I retell this occurrence, I always get shivers. If you're wondering how this happened at a new house, in a new subdivision, I'll honestly tell you, it's my fault. I played with a Hasbro glow-in-the-dark Ouija board. Used it at a slumber party, and many times after that. Always got an entity spirit person who called himself George. I blame no one but myself.
I have more stories involving George. The bomb shelters and naval housing, if you guys are curious. Side thing, ghost games. So there is the Ouija board, where you talk with spirits. I recently found out after watching the horror movie, The Midnight Game. Awful, don't watch. And there are other games. I haven't tried them, just researched. Some of them go way too far, even for me, and I do a lot of research into the paranormal and the occult. Tupelas, entities created from thought. So here's my question. If enough people believe in a fictional entity or ghost story, does it eventually become true? Just thought you guys would have fun talking or researching as I did. Well, thank you, Rue, for writing in and sharing that experience with us. That is a scary, scary idea that an entity can be created simply from thought or from someone or enough people thinking about it. It essentially means if enough people really thought or believed in like an urban legend, like Goatman. We've talked about Goatman on the show before. And there's various sightings and incarnations of that all over the country. But I guess if enough people believed and thought this entity existed, could that then in fact make it exist? Could its origin simply be the urban legend and really nothing else other than that? Or is that really just a demon realizing that, hey, all these people are scared of this idea, I'm going to make myself look like that shit? That's kind of where I tend to feel something like that may come from. Our phone number is 855-853-4802. Kat writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. This is Kat from Stockton, California. As promised, this is the second part of the demonic house. Just as a refresher, I had the Freddy Krueger type feeling trying to escape my stomach at age 5. My parents were warned by the previous owners about the house being haunted, but laughed it off. About a year after moving, my parents had an experience. One night they were lying in bed watching The Late Show on their black and white TV. Remember, this was the 70s, where my dad was lying. He could see the door and down the hall if it was open, which this night it was completely shut and locked. From my mom's view, she could only see the door, but nothing beyond it. They were talking when the doorknob started to turn. The door was locked, so the knob should not have turned, but that thought didn't come to mind until later. Assuming it was me and I was having one of my experiences, my dad said, 'It's okay, honey, come on in.' The door slowly opened and there stood a child-sized green mist. My mom could only see the door open, but not what was standing there. Still assuming it was me in my lime green footy PJs, he repeated, 'Come on in.' The door started to slowly close. My dad jumped up and caught the door before it could close completely. He swung it wide open enough for my mom to see there was nothing there. Confused and assuming I had somehow sprinted back to my room across the hall, he walked into my room and flipped on the light. I was in the middle of the bed under the covers. Just to make sure, he pulled back the covers and discovered I was wearing bright neon pink footy PJs. At this point, my dad is white as a ghost and goes running through the house looking for what had opened the door. All the windows and doors were locked, and the dogs were sound asleep in the living room. He had no explanation at this point. Checked the door. Sure enough, it was still locked, and the knob would not turn the way both of them had witnessed it turn. They didn't get a lot of sleep that night. This is where it gets a little more personal and scary. About 2 years after moving into the house, my mom got pregnant with my sister and she started hearing voices. They were tormenting, telling her to kill herself. She was worthless. The child she was carrying would never make it, etc. With the voices came horrific, graphic nightmares. My mom had no family history of mental illness, and this being the 70s, she was terrified to even tell her doctor for fear of being put into an asylum. She felt that the demon or entity in the house was after her unborn child. She was not a big believer in the paranormal, and it wasn't something that was talked about, so she really suffered in silence. Finally, at about 8 months pregnant, the voices and nightmares stopped. I guess they didn't get what they wanted, so they went back to attacking me full-time. Fast forward 6 months, my sister is born, and the paranormal stuff stopped for a while. However, my sister was like no other child I've ever experienced. She'd hold her breath until she turned blue and throw her head against the bed or the floor. This disturbing behavior from an infant. She always seemed like an old soul. She'd not sleep or take cat naps. She was always watching her surroundings intently, like she was trying to communicate something of great importance. She did everything from sitting up to walking and talking very early, yet it was creepy. When my sister started talking, she had a thick French accent and sounded like an inspector, Claire Sau from the Pink Panther movies. I don't believe in previous lives, but if I did, she would be the poster child. She was hell on wheels growing up, and really still is. So the final experience in my home happened to my grandma. My dad had picked her up and brought her to the house for a barbecue. The rest of us were at the store, getting the food for that afternoon. My dad was in the garage messing with his hot rod, and my grandma went into my sister's room to put away some laundry. She opened my sister's closet door, and this disembodied head came out at her with two hands that had eyes in the palms, like the symbols for OP surfwear. They reached for her. She screamed and ran out. She got in the car and refused to get out. My dad had no idea what happened. She just kept saying, "Don't you dare put that baby back in that room." By the time he got her home, she had calmed down enough to tell him what had happened. That combined with the attacks on me, my sister's strange behavior, and what they had seen finally convinced them to put the house up for sale. We moved across town into my mom's dream home. One more couple moved in there with two kids. We would go over and visit them often. They claimed to never see or hear anything, but less than 2 years later, they were divorcing and moved out of town. We never saw them again. A single older woman bought the house, and the very first thing she did was put iron bars in the windows. No other house in the neighborhood had bars, and they certainly weren't necessary back then. She lives there to this day. I can't help but wonder if those bars were to keep something in rather than keep someone out. I've yet to have the courage to go to the door when I'm out there visiting. I looked it up on Google Earth the other day and got physically sick to my stomach. Although our family has had many more years of paranormal activity, that was the only place that sent chills down my spine. It haunts me to this day to think of the people who might have been if not for that house. It left invisible scars that were never to be healed. I'll write in again about my many other experiences, including the new ones I've had at work while listening to your podcast. Maybe next time I'll tell you about the haunted Garfield balloon. P.S. 2 days ago, I was sitting at work listening to your podcast. Of course, and all of a sudden I got that ripping Freddy Krueger pain in my gut. My first thought was not paranormal. I figured I was coming down with something as we passed the plague around all the time. Too many people crammed into little offices with no ventilation to speak of. The pain got so bad, I was white-knuckling it and hanging onto my desk to keep from screaming out loud. I thought, as soon as I can breathe, I'm going to the ER. Then a voice whispered in my ear, "What if it's not normal?" I thought, paranormal, really? Then I thought back to the pain I had as a child and the light came on. It was the same. I always hear people say, they said the Lord's Prayer when they had things attacking them, and since I was in so much pain, I couldn't think clearly. I looked it up online and started saying it quietly to myself. Within a matter of minutes, it stopped, and I was fine. Strange, since I had been thinking about resubmitting this story that day. So here it is, with the added bonus of my recent attack. Thank you so much again for doing what you do. To haunted people like me, don't feel so alone. Happy haunting. Cat. Thank you, Cat, for sharing your story with us. I don't think I have a whole lot to add to that, other than I would be very, very intrigued as well and curious to know what's going on today in that haunted house that you grew up in. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. You want to share your real ghost story with us? We'd love to hear it. Let's go to a caller. Hi.
Hey, guys. Me and my family just drove from Portland, Oregon, all the way to Acadia National Forest in Maine. We even visited Portland, Maine. We had to. And then coming back from there, we went all through that national park, which is really old, and you still have carriage roads and these awesome views from the top of mountains, and you have like fjords and deep water and lobster everywhere. It's a really, really pretty place. However, the day we went there to camp, the overnight it started to rain torrentially. And so we were trying to find things to do in the park, which is a forest, in the pouring rain, which was pretty limited. So we decided to take the drive that goes through the entire park so that you can see everything. Like most national parks like Yellowstone and Yosemite, you can just drive around and see everything. So where it gets creepy is my wife says, oh, look, there's picnic spaces over there. It's like Bear Loop or something like that, it was called. I need to use the bathroom. So we go and we pull in, and I pull in front of the bathroom at that picnic area in the Acadian National Forest. And my wife comes out a few minutes later with this crazy look on her face. And so she gets in. I said, what's wrong? What happened? I said, do you see a spider? And she goes, no, I heard this really crazy cackling, like really like a really creepy laugh. And it just kept going the whole time. She says, there was three doors. One was the men's room. Another one wasn't marked. Another one wasn't marked on the far end. She goes, I thought the first one might have been a bathroom, so I tried that door, and that's when I started hearing the laughing. She goes, I went into the bathroom, and the laughing didn't stop. So I peed really quick, and I walked out. And so I said, well, let me go see. Maybe someone's messing with you. Nobody around. We're the only ones there. And we go to walk. I go to walk into the ladies' room, and there's a screen door. And I look inside at first, and the stall door slams shut. There was nobody in there. There really wasn't that much wind. It was just, you know, downpouring, drizzling rain. And when the door slammed, I heard what sounded to me like creaking or footsteps. So I turned around and I walked very quickly back to the car, and I said, Moe, let's get out of here. And we just drove off. She was pale faced for probably about 15, 20 minutes. And the thing that she kept saying was, I really hope I don't have any nightmares. I really hope that, you know, whatever I saw or whatever we just experienced doesn't follow us. Nothing else creepy has happened on this entire trip. So I think that we're pretty safe to say that whatever we ran into, it stayed there. But so if you guys ever travel to the beautiful coast of Maine and check out Acadia, which I highly recommend, it's a gorgeous country, lots and lots of history there, old cemeteries, Indian land, just so much history. Definitely check out every campsite. If you see the Bear Loop one, watch out for the bathroom. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for calling in and sharing your story with us. That would be terrifying if you don't know what is causing a noise like that. The only thing that could come to my mind, and it could be one of those simple explanations, and maybe it'll help you sleep better at night to think about maybe this being the possibility. I'm not saying it is or isn't. Could it be a child's toy? One that has the weird laughing to it? There's a lot of those. And if left on infinite loop or triggered somehow in another room or stall, or that could be very haunting with the echo. Especially, I mean, bathrooms in national forests or parks or anything are never the most welcoming or comforting areas. They're either very reminiscent of like a serial killer movie with a 1972 pale aqua tile that's faded and cracked and God knows what else is on it. You know, or they're just very concrete and wood and dark and dank and smelly and, you know, you're feeling hills have eyes-ish. You know, there's never, you don't walk into any of those feeling. This is a nice, warm, cozy latrine, if you will. Just a thought. I don't know. Or it could be something dead. 855-853-4802 is our number. Hi.
Hey, Tony. This is Walter again. I called you regards to about my mom and finding the antiques and the notebook that's apparently from some old serial killer like his memoirs or whatever, what he had done, and how my mom had ended up in a Southern church, and pastor like wigged out on her and told her she was gonna have two boys, one was gonna pass, and the firstborn was gonna suffer a cursed, cursed life, that this entity would follow him around and all this stuff. Well, in common regards to, I would have to call you about, 50, 60 times, because I've listened to all your ghost stories, and I don't even think anything yet, other than the guy that you have, the gentleman who kept calling in about his house being haunted and stuff, can even touch what I've had happen to me personally. So I'm going to just leave you my personal number. And everything that I've been having to deal with has been just strictly demonic. It hasn't been little stupid, like little ghost things, like, I saw a ghost, or ooh, I'm talking stuff has literally yanked me out of bed so hard by my arm that it almost yanked it out of the socket. I've gotten up the next day to go take a shower, and like my roommate's like, oh my God, what's on your back? And I take a look in the mirror, and it's literally like a 3-inch circumference, bite mark. Something that has a mouth that's 3 inches around it had to be huge. It's just unfathomable. And then when I started to look at that, I looked down at my arm, and what had grabbed me by the arm, this is just one of the stories, by the way. Its hands had to have been, so big, it would would be like a giant almost. Bruises were so deep, and the fingers were like spread a human's fingers apart. You probably got about 2.5 inches, and that's from the tip of each finger. So, I'm saying the fingers are spread apart from, the palm of the hand of what grabbed me was at least 1.5 inches to 2 inches. So, this thing was huge. But yeah, just give me a call, and we can go through some of the stories, and then you can decide what you'd like to put on air. Hope you and your wife are doing well, and really glad to have a line to call into and somebody to tell this to, because I went to some pastors, even priests and stuff, and they told me that I needed a psychologist, that I was completely nuts. And this is the first place that I could actually feel like a normal person to talk to somebody about it. So give me a ring. All right, thanks, Tony. Bye.
Thank you for calling in and sharing your stories with us. It does not sound like it's a very good situation to be in. We would like to hear more of your stories. And unfortunately, the way that we conduct our show and the way that we set things up, we don't very often or ever call people out when we're recording. It's just not the way that we produce the show, as you probably know. So we would love to hear more of your stories, and you are more than welcome to call back in. Pick some of the more pertinent ones, if you would, ones that stand out to you, that are ones maybe you just want to get off your chest. And feel free to share those with us. When you call into our phone line, you have about 12 minutes on the dot to get your story out. So feel free to call in and share more of your encounters with us. The phone number again, 855-853-4802, to share your real ghost stories with us. We would love to hear them. That is what we do on this show, Real Ghost Stories Online. We have a couple more calls today before we wrap things up here. So let me go over to one of those at 855-853-4802. Let's hear your story.
Hey, Tony and Jenny. This is Marsha from Austin, Texas. I have been a listener now for about a year, and an EPP for about a month, and it's been rocking. I suggest everyone do it. The $5 is really not that much. I have been experiencing paranormal things ever since I was a child. I am a twin, so I do have a twin brother, so I think that plays into it, as you guys were talking about in one of the latest episodes. I am in case you were wondering, I am able to communicate with my brother telepathically. It's a bit easier when he's around and we can just sort of exchange glances, but sometimes I do sense, me living in Texas and him living in Utah, sometimes I do actually sense things that are going on in his life. So that's pretty cool. Really quick, I've been a paranormal researcher for about the past 5 years. And there's been some questions thrown out that I think I might have at least a little bit of insight to. Obviously, I'm not professional or an expert on the topic, but I was able to find a few answers of some things. You guys have been talking about imaginary friends and how it's so difficult to tell the difference between whether it's actually just the child imagining something or if it's a spirit. And I was listening to a talk and an interview with a medium, and she was able to sort of group them into kind of three groups. And she, you know, obviously there's a little bit of a gray area in everything, but the first is an imaginary friend that your child assigns to a doll or to a stuffed animal, and that this imaginary friend does whatever the child wants, acts and behaves however the child wants. They don't fight. You will never hear them fight. You will never hear them get in arguments or the child blame anything on their imaginary friend. Everything will be dory. That is a legitimate imaginary friend. The next step that she explained was a good spirit that is interacting with your child, or a spirit that is interacting with your child in a good way, the child is able to talk to the individual, see the individual, have conversations with the individual, but the individual comes and goes as they please. Nothing wrong ever happens. It's just an interaction between the two, as if they are just merely, you know, conversing or playing, and then the child will sort of disappear. So the imaginary friend will sort of disappear. And the last one is the sort of evil entities, if you were, that the child is getting in fight with its imaginary friend, and they're blaming accidents on the imaginary friend, and all these things, negative things start occurring around the time that the imaginary friend starts showing up, and the child is getting in fights with it and saying that it doesn't want, that he or she doesn't want to do what the imaginary friend is telling it to do. That's when the medium said you need to start to worry and start to look into it and figure out just what's going on with the child. So there's a little insight there. Don't know where your imaginary friend falls, Jenny. I've missed a couple of the way, way back episodes, so I don't believe I've heard the full story. But yeah, this is just some a little bit of explaining as far as all of us as spirits. I personally, from my research, have gleaned the information that we were spirits before we came to Earth, and we're spirits after we came to Earth. And before we come to Earth, we help those in our bloodlines to lead good lives and lead the lives that they should be leading in order for us to be born. And then afterwards, we guide our posterity to continue the line, and we are sort of guarded by our ancestors. So if you can think about it that way, you're surrounded by those who came before you who were good people, and you're also surrounded by darker spirits. And so whatever you're giving into at the moment, if you're trying to be happy and positive, then the good spirits will be stronger and be able to protect you more. And if you're giving into the depression and the feelings of loneliness and ostracizing yourself and different things, that the darker spirits tend to get stronger. And that's why people like myself have gone into a depressive state. Paranormal things start to happen very quickly, and they start to happen very obviously. Hence the reason why poltergeists are said to come from living people rather than being a separate entity of themselves. It's an energy that we ourselves put off in a negative nature that causes this being into existence. I do have a story about a poltergeist that I will share at another time. I also have experiences of the psychic nature. That will be the next story I share. So I hope you guys can use this. I hope it gleans some information for you. And yeah, see you guys on the other side. Bye.
Thank you for calling in and sharing your insight. It's always helpful and interesting when it's coming from a place of real knowledge there. So thank you for sharing all that. We really do appreciate when we get a call like that. So thank you so much for listening and being that attentive to our little program here. 855-853-4802. One more call before we wrap up the show for the day. Hi.
Hey, guys. This is Jesse from Seattle area. And first off, just wanted to echo a lot of other people, just letting you guys know I really enjoy the podcast. They're great to listen to. Like to listen to them every night before I go to bed. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. So keep up the great work, and definitely will be becoming an EPP one of these days, for sure. So anyway, my story, you know, I'm not sure that it's really, but I think it's definitely could be considered paranormal. So curious to see what you guys think. I think it was like last summer. I was driving around. I was using my mom's car a lot during that summer, doing some work for her and stuff. And was driving around doing some errands one day, and I just kind of happened to glance over towards the dashboard, and I'm not sure why, I just looked over, and I noticed the, I think it was the trip meter, you know, where it reads the number of miles that you're traveling, like if you're going to on a trip or something, and you want to calculate how many miles or whatever. I wasn't using that or anything, I just happened to glance over at it, and the number read, it was four digits, and the number read 666.0. So 666, and then like the tenth of a mile was zero, so perfectly like 666. And I just thought, wow, that's very strange and kind of freaky, you know. And you know, I was just trying to figure out like the odds of that happening seemed pretty rare. And I was like, is that probably isn't a great sign. And so it was, you know, kind of actually did a little research and was trying to figure out, you know, what does that mean. And you know, if you see that number, and I couldn't get a whole lot of information. I don't know, maybe some of your listeners or you guys might have thoughts on what exactly it means, aside from just being, you know, a bad omen type thing. But one thing I did see was that it could just mean, like, not necessarily super negative, but it could just mean that you're focused too much on, like, material things and kind of the day-to-day grind if you're in business or something like that. And to start thinking more about the big picture. I don't know if that's legitimate or what. But anyway, so I just thought it was strange. And the fact that, what are the odds, right, that those four digits would be, because 666.6, I guess, would, I mean, I don't know. To me, the 666.0 even made it more weird. So, but the stranger part was, like, a couple weeks later, yeah, I didn't really think about it too much after that day. And a couple weeks later, I was in the car again doing some stuff. And I, you know, I kind of looked back over to where I was, where I initially saw that number on the odometer, and for the life of me, I could not figure out where that number would even be showing. I didn't see any kind of, like, trip meter there, and I kind of flipped through the mode and the modes button and tried to switch things around, and I could not for the life of me figure out where I would have even, like, seen that number. There wasn't anything with, like, four digits lining up anywhere. And again, I wasn't my car, so maybe I missed something or something got switched. Who knows? But to me, that was very strange, too, the fact that I couldn't even, like, replicate even the area in the car where that had happened. I thought that was a little bit odd. So it was like, God, did I dream this? Did this even happen? But, I'm pretty certain that it did happen and not really sure why and how, considering I could no longer even find that area on the car. So thought that was strange. Hopefully you guys like the story. Thanks again. Take care.
Thank you for calling in and sharing that story with us. I come across that number a lot. I come across a lot of numbers that seem to have some sort of symbolic meaning to them. I seem to catch them in passing. Now, I think we, in our daily lives, we come across so many numbers. And if you're someone who's into the paranormal or things of that nature, the number 666 is going to stand out more than 423 or insert any other random combination of numbers, which we probably see just as frequently than the 666. The situation you were in, the time, the place, that all is interesting and very coincidental. Creepily coincidental. Could it mean something more? Sure. I also notice I see
9/11 a lot too, or it stands out to me much more than it used to. Just I seem to glance at the clock quite a bit when those are the digits. I seem to just come across those things and go, ah, it's creepy. I don't know. But it could just be, you know, our minds going, oh, these numbers have much more significance to us now than other random combinations of numbers. That's kind of my take on it. I know there's a whole numerology thing about this and out there. I'm not against it. I'm not for it. I don't know much about it. That's all I got on that. But could there be some meanings? I'm sure. I wouldn't doubt it at all. But I also know how our minds can make things stand out more when we're more aware of them, too. So that's my thoughts on that. Thank you for your stories. Thank you for your letters today. It's been a fun show. We have Jenny back here in a couple more episodes. She's still gone for a few more days. So you got me and you and more great real ghost stories on tomorrow's episode as well. Please support the show. Keep it on the air if you want more episodes. If you're just dying to hear more of Jenny with me, sign up to become an EPP. All those episodes right there. Jenny is on them from the past 40 up to 46, I think she's on. 47 is me, but 46 is you can't go wrong. She'll be back in a couple days and we'll be back to complete normal here. But I didn't want to stop doing the show while she was gone because I know how much you guys like it. So until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.